Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. It's been a dangerous and damaging summer in upstate New York with a record number of tornadoes even before August. As the Legislative Gazette's Samantha Simmons reports, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says the situation warrants more study.
For many communities in upstate New York, the past month has been like a scene out of the movie Twisters.
According to the National Weather Service, New York has recorded 23 tornadoes this month alone, setting a new record. It's also nearly double the record set in July 1992. Speaking at the state's MesoNet Operations Command Center, a network of monitoring systems based at the University at Albany's E-Tech campus, Schumer says the increased funding would support technology upgrades and research capabilities. The Democrat is seeking $30 million, an increase of $10 million over last year.
We're going to keep seeing terrible storms throughout our region, throughout the country. It's worse than it used to be. And that's why we need to make sure that this MesoNet system isn't just up and running, but state-of-the-art.
An EF2 tornado touched down in the city of Rome on July 16th that ripped roofs from houses, reduced brick buildings to rubble, and toppled steeples from two historic churches. No one died, but the storm left debris throughout downtown. New York Governor Kathy Hochul has requested a federal emergency declaration to support response and recovery efforts for 15 upstate counties impacted by storms on July 15th and 16th. Christopher Thorncroft, the center's executive director and director of UAlbany's Atmospheric Sciences Research Center, says MesoNets are a critical part of weather infrastructure in New York and can provide critical information for first responders.
Each site is equipped with automated sensors that measure weather information such as temperature, wind speed, snow, rainfall. We also have cameras that photograph the current conditions, which is invaluable. MesoNet data is collected in real time, feeding weather prediction models and decision-making support tools for across the New York, including government, the National Weather Service, emergency managers, as well as the general public.
Thorncroft says the funding would support the center's 127 sites across the state's 62 counties in laser technology used to monitor the atmosphere.
Without that kind of money, we could lose some of the sensors, if you like. So we do need that extra money.
Schumer's efforts come at a time when some Republicans are proposing to cut funding for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the National Weather Service and privatize their services. Schumer says recent storms show why it's important to increase funding for weather systems.
These are potentially life and death questions. If you can know better and quicker and more in advance where a tornado will hit and precisely where it will hit, you can save lives.
In 2023, Schumer secured more than $1.3 million for UAlbany to expand its Empire State Vertex project, which uses data from 17 MesoNet sites to understand lower parts of the atmosphere and its instability every 5 minutes. Data gathered by the MesoNet can be accessed at nysmesonet.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Samantha Simmons.
This week, New York State Board of Elections Commissioners approved the ballot language for a constitutional amendment that will appear before voters this fall. But some supporters of the proposal to add anti-discrimination and healthcare autonomy provisions are concerned that the wording fails to meet plain language requirements. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
And of the city of Plattsburgh, where it abuts the SUNY campus, what we're hoping to do is create a really smooth, quick, safe corridor.
Plattsburgh Director of Community Development Courtney Meisenheimer notes that the bike-friendly plan has been guiding the citywide strategy that has led to opportunities to receive grants like the Climate Smart Communities.
This will connect to the Saranac River Trail, project that has been continuing to build out phase after phase. It will connect to, other roads that have sharrows on them. And so it's building this huge
map of a Plattsburgh that is friendly to bikes, and we're creating important routes of connectivity, not just for recreation, but also for folks to commute to get from where they need to be. That supports folks, you know, who don't have access to cars and they need to travel for work. It supports our student population in so many different ways.
The Department of Environmental Conservation says the grants are intended to help communities take action to address climate change. The City of Plattsburgh has a climate task force and is working to obtain silver certification from the state. Coordinator Rochelle Armstrong is thrilled the city obtained this latest state grant.
Such a project is right down our alley. We support it 100%. The fact is, we're all going to have to adapt to climate change. And not only does this kind of project help us to do that by, you know, enabling us to think about other ways to travel rather than our cars, but then it's also a much healthier way to live. So I think this is a very significant piece of an overall plan that's really on the forefront of trying to adapt to climate change and mitigate its effects.
Ward 3 Democratic Common Councillor Elizabeth Gibbs had been a member of the task force and says while the work of the task force is separate, it helps the city secure more grants like the Climate Smart Communities funding.
This is the reason why I fought so hard back in 2021 for the Climate Smart Task Force to be reassembled, and we finally achieved that in 2022. Because once you're certified as a Climate Smart Community, then you're on the state's radar as eligible for grants. And so this is now the outcome, you know, being awarded this grant of all of that hard work.
The City of Plattsburgh was notified about a month ago that the grant had been awarded, and it's hoped the project can be implemented by next summer.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with Blair Horner. He's the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group. And I began by asking Blair about his latest column, which talks about making polluters pay in New York.
Just so the listeners know, the Climate Change Superfund Act is a legislation that passed both houses in Albany. And is scheduled at some point to go to the governor's desk. And the bill basically says that the state is facing huge costs due to climate change and the resulting more intense storms, which wash away roads and make schools hotter and make people sicker and make the air quality worse. I mean, all of those things cost money to deal with. And so the Superfund Act basically says that the oil companies should pick up at least part of the tab. Vermont actually passed a similar bill earlier this year in June. And it's along the same lines because in Vermont, there have been now twice the state capital has been flooded because of more intense storms in that state. And there's been more and more intense storms because of the changing climate and the rapidly heating planet. So the question really is who do you want to pay? The taxpayers or the oil companies? We argue the oil companies because they've known for decades, for at least 50 years, that the burning of fossil fuels would lead to a worsening climate and global warming, and that's exactly what's happened. And instead of being good corporate citizens and telling everybody, warning everybody, they bamboozled the public with phony baloney ads and spent campaign contributions on legislators who would not do anything about it and front groups. And so now we're stuck. And so we think they should pick up part of the tab, and they have the money to do it. So that's a little bit different than all the other things you were talking about in terms of, like, how do you transition from a fossil fuel-based powered economy to one that's not. And the state is slipping behind on its climate goals. There's supposed to be – there's a law on the books, the Climate Act, which sets specific goals and a phase out of the reliance on fossil fuels by 2050, which is what the world scientists say has to happen. And New York is slipping past its goals. Its first goal is coming up in 2030 in terms of, I believe, 70% of its power coming from non-fossil fuel sources. And it's nowhere near that. And so a lot of rhetoric out of Albany turns out to be hot air. And unfortunately, it can't be used to generate power for the state of New York.
Let's continue this conversation about the climate. You mentioned transitioning is a whole different thing. Now I see the Business Council of New York State is out with recommendations. They say they need a more, quote, thoughtful and practical approach to the climate transition. The Business Council has three primary concerns. React to these for me, Blair. Higher energy prices, whose impacts would ripple through the state's economy. Reduced reliability of the state's energy grid that would affect homes, institutions, and businesses. Adverse impacts on the state's overall economic climate that may discourage new investments and job growth. Political or practical?
Well, I mean, the Business Council has been advocating against a lot of these environmental initiatives for years, and, you know, that's their orientation. They are more focused on those issues than they are what impact not doing anything has on the climate. Let's start with the basic facts. The world's experts at the International Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, which is a global group organized by the United Nations of the world's top thousands of climate scientists, they say that to avert catastrophe for the planet, the world has to be off fossil fuels by the middle of this century, basically net zero greenhouse gas emissions.
We just marked three hottest days on record ever, right?
And every year is, on average, hotter than the previous year. And the world's experts say in order to do that, you have to curb greenhouse gas emissions. You have to work towards zero by the middle of the century. Otherwise, it's a catastrophe for civilization on the planet, not also to mention all of the other species that are not human. That's what the science tells you. And the affordability question, which the Business Council raises, imagine how expensive it's going to be to live in circumstances where the planet is out of control in terms of its climate change. That's going to be an enormous cost, economic, human terms, and the environment generally.
And we're already seeing it, as you referenced, in Vermont and New York, of course.
Yeah, well, and New York, right. I mean, there's been, you know, unprecedented numbers of tornadoes, more intense storms. Last year, people might remember, at the end of May, beginning of June, into July, the air quality was terrible. In fact, the air in New York City turned orange at one point because of Canadian wildfires. Now, all of that, you know, the wildfires are not just about climate change. Sometimes they're about arson. But when you have a drier forestry and drier undergrowth, anything like that, a lightning strike, arson, whatever it is, makes the storms worse. So you can't, you start with the science. The science says you have, the world has to get off fossil fuels. The United States is not moving fast enough. California, New York, Massachusetts, those are the states that have to lead the parade. That's what the state's climate law does. It can't be more thoughtful than being based on science. Now, because the state is dragging its feet, that could be the reason why we're not going to meet the goals. It has more to do with a failure of political will than it does the practicality of the goals. New York is not at the lead in terms of a lot of the renewable goals that in the country. California's had, I think, 100 straight days of at least part of each day being powered by 100% non-fossil fuel power.
Renewables. That's Blair Horner, executive director of NYPIRG, the New York Public Interest Research Group. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Although they remain down on politics, New Yorkers are feeling optimistic about the future, according to a new Siena College Research Institute poll. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
Poll director Don Levy says the survey finds New Yorkers describe themselves more as optimistic than as pessimistic by 78 to 21%.
Overwhelmingly, 78% said, I'm optimistic. You know, I, as a pollster, maybe I'm a little bit like a journalist. You know, I tend to pry. I want to know what people are thinking. What are you thinking about when you're driving alone in the car? What are you thinking when you put your head down on the pillow at night? And so then we asked, as you think about how you feel most days, Do you feel like you spend more time worrying, more time being happy, or you spend about equal amounts of time? Those are minutes and seconds that you spend in the privacy of your own mind. And 36% of all New Yorkers said that they spend more time being happy. Fewer, but still a decidedly large group, 28% said they spend more time worrying, and the balance, also about a third, said they move back and forth.
Levy says respondents 65 and over say they're spending more time being happy rather than worrying. 73% of New Yorkers say they're more likely to feel worried when they think about money. And for New Yorkers earning $50,000 or less, 82% say when they think about money, they're worried.
Those New Yorkers who make $50,000 or less were very forward with us. And by 41 to 26, they say, I spend much more of my time worrying than I do being happy. So these are, you know, insights into the privacy of people's own thought processes. When people listen to this interview on their favorite radio station, they're going to be invited to think about themselves. You know, when I'm alone with my thoughts, am I worried or am I happy?
Levy says that although 57% of New Yorkers say there's less opportunity today than there was 50 years ago, 52% say there's more opportunity today to live a healthy life, and 58% say there is more opportunity to be who you are in terms of self-expression and sexuality. Did COVID change people's perceptions?
It's hard to say. I think that you could guess that the pandemic and those years had an impact on all of us. Perhaps we prize our interactions with others now, again, more than we used to. Perhaps we appreciate that more. We did ask about, living a healthy life. Perhaps the pandemic and the pain associated with it drove up the percent saying that there's less opportunity to live a healthy life. We also asked about something like to have access to clean air and water. There's something that perhaps 50 years ago we would have said, oh, we'd be in pretty good shape by today. That was sort of a split. 39% say there's more opportunity to have access to clean air and water today. 38% say there's less opportunity.
About 9 out of 10 New Yorkers across all income levels reported worrying about politics and the state of the world. Asked if he himself is an optimist or a pessimist, Levy says he is a more optimistic person.
So in a sense, what we found in the survey is that despite financial pressures, despite political polarization, which I'm sure we'll talk about many times as the months move on, that it is a bit gratifying that the vast majority of us cling to and pronounce that despite all that, I remain optimistic. Despite all that, I plan on a better tomorrow for myself, for my family. And, you know, as a pollster, as a person, the day that that optimism wanes, the day that that optimism drops and we become, as a society, pessimistic will, I think, be a very sad day for us all.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Officials in Johnsburg have unveiled plans to expand recreational trails in collaboration with a local business. The Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella Levine with that story.
Barton Mines has been in operation in the Adirondacks for nearly 150 years, mining garnet for industrial water jet use. Now, after 5 years of work, it's getting close to donating a recreational easement located on 200 acres of forested land to the northern Warren County town.
So we've been talking about this informally with the town for a couple of years. Now we want to make it happen. And as you may have heard, Warren County is now recognizing the importance of trails and economic activity, so the timing is perfect.
Chuck Barton is a fifth-generation trustee of the mining company. He says the collaboration is a result of Barton Mines' commitment to being a responsible part of the Johnsburg community.
This is what we do. So Why, if you have land, and by the way, that land's been in the business or family for many years, it's land we don't use, so it's underutilized, and why not do the easement so the community can have the advantage of what the land can offer? So it's a fairly easy decision.
The donation will create new all-season public recreational trails that will connect the North Creek Ski Bowl Recreational Center with the state-owned Siamese Ponds Wilderness. Barton, an avid skier, is excited to be able to enjoy the land with locals and visitors alike.
If you're down the Ski Bowl and you want to get to Siamese Wilderness area, you have to go along Route 28 around the base of the mountain and then over to the side of the Barton Mines Road, the Siamese Wilderness area. That line, I know we're talking here, you don't have a camera. Now from the Ski Bowl, you can go up the mountain, you can go across our property and right over into the Siamese Wilderness area. So it is enormously shorter and frankly more scenic and more exciting.
The donated land is part of the company's Gore Mountain Mine and sits 5 miles south of its current mining operation at Ruby Mountain. Republican Johnsburg Town Supervisor Kevin Bean says easier travel between the Ski Bowl and Wilderness area and creation of new trails will be great for the local economy.
And this is just an incredible opportunity to, again, continue to grow our trail network for hikers, skiers, mountain bikers, snowshoers, all of it, you know? And when people come here, especially in the summertime, yeah, okay, you're going to come fishing. Yeah, after a while, you're kind of, okay, I want to find some other stuff to do. Hiking and mountain biking is huge. It's an incredible opportunity for us, for the town, without a doubt.
Christine Powers runs a nearby spiritual and mindfulness retreat.
And this is just going to make everything so much easier because in order to have a vibrant economy, you have to have the tourists come. And so to bring more people who may have not quite the stamina or the endurance to have an easier trail system, more accessible, more connected, it can only lift the whole community. So we're really thrilled with this.
Anna Bowers is both a town board member and a local school teacher. She says the trail expansions go far beyond attracting more tourists.
Locals are going to use this. Kids are going to use this. And I think that's a really important part about our recreation. It's for everyone. And the more that we have people in our community using it, the more they're going to stay here, the more they're going to raise their families, the more that you're going to have kids come back. We have a ski program at the school because every student at Johnsburg gets a ski pass. We have kids who do a second through fourth grade ski program, 6 weeks. It's amazing. So this is just another way that we can get our kids and our community being a part of the things that, yeah, tourists get to do it, but guess what? That's our mountain, and we get to do it midweek when nobody's here.
The easement is expected to be finalized in the coming months. Reporting for the Southern Adirondack Bureau on the campus of Skidmore College, this is Aaron Shello Levine.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. After a close Democratic primary, the general election field is set for New York's 102nd State Assembly District seat. More from Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
Earlier this month, the five counties included in the recently redrawn 102nd New York State Assembly District released their official tallies from the June 25th Democratic primary. Janet Tweed finished 77 votes ahead of Mary Finneran. Official results from Albany County were published July 10th, following tallies by Delaware, Greene, Otsego, and Schoharie counties. Finneran, a retired art teacher and Caro-based advocate who was endorsed by the Working Families Party, has not yet conceded in the race. She declined multiple requests for a WAMC interview, waiting until the State Board of Elections certifies the primary results. Tweed, a Delhi Village board member and physical therapist by trade, said she has been looking to November since finishing ahead of Finneran on primary night. Her campaign declared victory on July 5th. Now, readying for a general election matchup against Republican incumbent Chris Tague, Tweed says she would bring a rural perspective to Albany's Democratic supermajority.
It's someone who's in the room at the table with other Democrats, but being able to say our main goals may be the same, but some of the focus, some of the ways that plans need to be implemented, you need to also pay attention to the needs and the differences that rural communities have.
Touting her local government experience, Tweed said if elected, her approach would involve the two C's, communication and collaboration.
Where I've had success at my positions on town and village boards is being able to do that, to find that shared focus where what do we agree on and what can we work toward? And that does require communication, but also collaboration. What's working? What's not?
Tweed's campaign focused on the issues of affordable health care, a woman's right to choose, infrastructure, and environmental and agricultural sustainability.
One of the issues that continues to come up and has been a big issue has been the implementation of the large projects for solar farms and wind farms.
Tweed says large energy companies have been given a fast pass for development and that she wants to ensure local control is protected. Republican Teague has represented the district for three terms. The former Schoharie Town supervisor often touts his agricultural background and is advocating for a rural equity program in the state legislature. The package of legislation would support farms, local municipalities, emergency services, energy, and transportation. The 2024 RNC delegate is confident voters will line up behind Republicans this fall.
I'm not one of those people that lets grass grow under their feet. I have always, and because of my experience at this, you have to be out there, you have to be among the people. And everywhere I go, you know, people come to me and say, you know, we got to win this November. We got to save this state and we got to save this country.
Like Tweed, Teague also supports protecting home rule. The Republican took a vocal stance against the so-called RAPID Act, a provision in the state budget that expedites the permitting and approval process to connect clean energy projects to the grid. Teague says the legislation threatens family farms. Looking toward November, Teague says he does not know his Democratic opponent.
I've met her once. She seems like a very nice lady. But I can guarantee that her and I have some very serious fundamental differences on policy and how our state and how our country should look.
Election Day is November 5th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. Look for program number 2431 and join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gostina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.